But thank you so much for coming across the bridge to this remote hideout. I think Dick Cheney is actually in one of the suites out there, in case anybody's looking for him. It's such an obscure location. Thank you for giving me a little bit of your conference time. I hope to make it worth your while. So just a little bit of Twitter business before we start. If you guys can, during the course of this conference, tell everybody else that they're missing out using hashtag SWMixel, that would be awesome. Just say, wow, you guys all went to the wrong place. This is the place to be. That would be great. And then, of course, you can follow us on at Mixel. And my own Twitter feed is at Koi. So a little bit about me, in case you don't know anything about me before I start. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Mixel. And we've been around since the beginning of 2011, so just about a year now. And I'm going to talk a lot about what we're doing, obviously, over the course of the next hour. I've been writing a blog at subtraction.com for about 12 years now, which I find kind of hard to believe. I've been writing about design and culture and technology for quite a while. In 2010, I wrote this book published by New Writers. It's called Ordering Disorder. It's about using grid principles for the web. It's really just a lot of my thoughts about interaction design in general. And I am perhaps best known for being the design director at NewYorkTimes.com until 2010, where I led a team and we built products across all different kinds of digital platforms. Lots of stuff on the web and then mobile stuff and tablets and so forth. I mean, actually, if you look at the arc of that career, the major things that I've done up until recently were all very word-based, very, very text and very literal. And with Mixel, I've gone in a new direction, something that I think is really interesting, and it's actually kind of a nice departure from that word-based realm that I came from. So I'm going to start today by talking about the core foundational concept of what we're trying to do with Mixel, just this word art, which is kind of a scary word to a lot of people, and actually, a lot of maybe more so in this room than other rooms. People are comfortable with art, but in most rooms, when you start talking about art, a lot of people start thinking, "Oh, like I don't know anything about that," or maybe like I'm in the wrong place. I should be somewhere else because art is really not my thing. But that obviously isn't the case for all of our lives. Actually, in the beginning, like when we're kids, we all start out, very, very comfortable with creative visual self-expression. And this really came home to me when my partner and I had a daughter 2.5 years ago. This is our daughter, Twi. And when she started turning, about the age where she could sort of master, writing and drawing implements, she just started, scribbling and painting and ripping things up and assembling things together like crazy. And this is a regular part of her day. And I really just got to see like how uninhibited we are as children, to just make things. It's really quite phenomenal. And when she sits down and she draws and paints, it's not about, mastering technique, or it's not about like, grabbing certain implements and really refining, the use of those implements. It's really just about just throwing ideas out there. And actually, behaviorists say like when kids draw, they're actually drawing to understand the world around them. They're having this conversation with themselves and just sort of seeing what comes out. And also, at the same time, refining the mastery of their motor skills and so forth. So, once in a while, she might, hit, a bump in the road and despair for like a half a moment, but she always soldiers on and keeps on doing it. And I just found this to be really kind of a remarkable thing. The idea that as we get older, we grow out of creativity, right? Like the older we get, the more advanced in our years, the less creative we get, all of us, even those of us who consider ourselves creative. It's sort of like this unavoidable arc that we all follow. So why is this? I started asking myself this question a couple of years ago. And part of it is, objectively, not everybody is a good artist. There are a lot of people who are just not good at this kind of thing, right? But you know, I think there are actually many more people who are good at it than we'll give themselves credit for. But one of the main reasons is what happens is we all lose this idea of the social context, the encouragement that fuels art making as a kid. You know, at some point, like at 5 years old or 6 years old or 7 years old, something like that, you know, society stops telling us, yeah, you should keep doing this. You're great at this. You should, you know, there's nothing wrong with what you're doing. Instead, the message becomes, you should maybe stop embarrassing yourself. You know, you're not that good at it. Or maybe you have some sort of moderate level of talent, and then what you start hearing is, that's pretty good, but then there's another kid in class who's just phenomenal at it, who can draw like nobody else's business, and they just get praise heaped upon them. And so by dint of the fact that you're getting this faint praise, you start thinking, well, you know, maybe I shouldn't be doing this anymore. Maybe I should, you know, start moving on and doing something else. It's this sort of self-selection process happens, which is another key idea here. So we start losing this social context, but, you know, in many ways, social context is what we have more than ever before, right? I mean, we have hundreds of millions of people on Facebook, and we have hundreds of millions of tweets going out on Twitter every single day. We've got this ever-expanding World Wide Web that, you know, people can find anything that they like, anything that drives their passion on the web. All you have to do is know that you're passionate about it, and you can find the encouragement, you can find the social context that helps fuel that on the internet. And the interesting thing about, you know, social media is it really democratizes, you know, disciplines that were previously reserved only for experts, only for the anointed few who could do these things that required lots of skill and talent. And if you sort of look over the short history of social media, you'll see that over and over again. You know, with journalism, right? A few decades ago, few people would have thought of themselves qualified to engage in any kind of journalism. And then, you know, we had Blogger and WordPress and Twitter. Now, journalism is a thing that we all own and that we all participate in. Same thing with video and filmmaking. You know, YouTube and Vimeo came along, and now, you know, millions of people are actively creating narratives in video form or in film form every day, people who never would have touched it before. The same thing goes with photography, right, with Flickr and Instagram and before Photolog and so forth. The photography is particularly interesting. If you go back in time 2 decades to 1992 and you were to say to somebody in that year, so, you know, jump forward to 2012, everybody in this room, everybody in every restaurant in Austin is going to be carrying a camera around with them that they have with them pretty much 7 days a week. And not only that, they will have taken the equivalent of a roll of film in the past 5 days or in the past 24 hours. That would have been a really outlandish statement to make to somebody living in 1992, right? And the reason is because we just didn't think we needed that much ability to record our world visually around us. And more to the point, it wasn't social, right? It wasn't something that you did to inherently share with other people. And you go back in time even further, and you know, you look at like our grandparents and their parents and so forth, and you know, those people had a few dozen photos of themselves throughout their whole lives, maybe throughout their whole, at least, you know, their childhood and their young adulthood. People just didn't take that many photos back then. But over the course of the past century, it got progressively more social until it started taking off when social media came along and just made it something that was highly conversational. So I think what photography shows us, especially, and additionally, you know, journalism and filmmaking, is that everything that can be social will be social. And I think it's really worth repeating. Everything that can be social will be social. And that includes art, right? That includes the idea that, you know, you can take this activity that we currently think only a few people can do. If you can combine it with the power of social media, you can really start to lower the barrier to entry for creativity. Right? And we know this because there's a pattern here, right? It's not just that social media comes along, but there's a specific pattern where social media unites with hardware and really makes this happen. If you look again at journalism and at blogging, what happened was, you know, the blogging tools came along at a time when all of a sudden people started buying laptops. And all of a sudden you were able to create content away from the computer at your office. You were able to take your computer to bed. You were able to take your computer on the roof. And you had access to the internet. And you were able to start publishing nonstop 24 hours a day. You know, again, the same thing happened with video. Flip cams came along. And then, you know, iPhones and other, you know, video-taking devices came along at the same time as, you know, YouTube and Vimeo and so forth. And again, photography, digital cameras, whether there were, you know, DSLRs or there were phones, combining with Flickr and you know, Picasa and so forth, all of that conspired together. And we have that situation again today with the iPad, right? People are buying this thing like crazy, and they're buying them because they want to read their email, they want to watch movies and read books and magazines. But you know what they're doing is they're taking home, at the same time, they're taking home like a perfect digital art making tool. This is a tool that is intuitive for visual self-expression like no other computer that came before it. It's really an amazing opportunity. And we really believe, of course, that if you can combine tablets and social media, you can do something really new. You can sort of start to unleash the creativity of tons and tons of people and really show that most everybody out there is creative. So this is our mission at Mixel. This is what we've dedicated ourselves to doing, is combining tablets and social and helping everyone to rediscover, you know, their inherent creativity, so re-engage that part of their brain that they haven't touched since they were 5 or 6 or 7 years old. And so why is this important beyond just doing it, right? You know, there is a real social and cultural and economic imperative to make all of us more creative and therefore more innovative. You know, we're getting further and further into this century where there are so many competitive factors on, you know, a national level, on a municipal level, on a personal level that requires innovation, requires creativity. You know, Ken Robinson, if you're not familiar with him, he wrote a couple of amazing books, The Element and Out of Our Minds. And he has a fantastic TED Talk that I really recommend everybody look at or watch. He says, you know, we have to recognize that cultivating our natural powers of imagination, creativity, and innovation is not an option but a necessity for us to survive going further into this century. All right, so those are the big ideas. Now I'm going to show you a bit about how Mixel works. And Mixel is a social network. The idea that you follow people and people follow you from other social networks is present inside Mixel as well. So when you first come into the app, you have this updates tab which shows you the latest stuff that everybody's doing. Everybody's making collages with Mixel. Mixel is a collage-making app. You have a My Mixels tab which stores all the work that you've made and the work that you have that's in progress. And then you have the popular tab that shows you the best stuff from across the network, regardless of whether or not you're following those people. And that's where you find new people, and you see who they're following and who their followers are, and you can sort of survey their body of work and then decide to follow them and so forth. So it's a great way to see what's happening on the network. So creating a collage, making Mixels, is really, really simple. We've worked really hard to make it as elementary as possible. All you do is tap on that big Start a New Mixel button, and you get a new canvas. Then you tap on Add Image, and we give you several options for pulling in images from everywhere. We have what's popular on Mixel. You can grab stuff off your iPad, off of your Facebook account. We have a web image search. We have, this is coming soon, we have a random button. In case you don't know what to start with, you can just keep loading random images. The web image search works just like a Google image search does. You just type in a term, and then you get results. You get about 100 results, and you just keep scrolling and scrolling. You preview one of them, say, okay, yes, I want to use this, and it gets dropped to your canvas. And at this point, it becomes even more intuitive because we just rely on the simple, obvious multi-touch gestures to manipulate the images. You can just pinch and zoom to enlarge the images, to rotate them. You tap crop and go into a crop mode where you just use your finger just to cut out the parts that you don't need. Just really, really simple, single action. Tap done, and it gets dropped onto the canvas. And so no time at all, you know, you can get something that's at least visually satisfying, visually intriguing, even if it's not, you know, high art, so to speak. So this sets up a dynamic that we like to think of as object-oriented art. What's happening when you pull in any image, whether it's from Facebook or whether it's from your iPad or whether it's from the web? What's happening is the app is uploading that full image to our server, to the cloud, and we're storing the full image on the cloud. And so all the art that's inside Mixel is actually live, in a sense. That means you can open up any Mixel, and the app basically reassembles that image for you, sort of pulls it back together, and you can sort of see how it's put together. You can touch the images or the different pieces and sort of pull them apart. They all snap back into place, and sort of see how it's put together. Moreover, any piece that you touch on, you can see there's a little thumbnail on the bottom. It shows you the original image, and it additionally will show you all the other uses of that image throughout the network. So this one of Jeremy Lin, at the time I made this recording, was used in something like, I think 37 is what it says, 37 other Mixels. And you can tap on any of those images and jump over there and do the same thing, explore that image, or explore that collage, pull it apart, see what's made of, and continue to follow those images around. In a way, we sort of think of it as the images sort of having a social life of their own. I mean, we try to make Mixel deeply, deeply social. And so, you know, we think of these images going out and sort of, you know, mingling with other images and taking on new meanings and being cropped in different ways and just sort of, you know, doing things that the original uploader never intended. So this also means that you could go and pick the stuff that you want from each Mixel, sort of cherry pick stuff that you like and sort of assemble new collages out of them. And, you know, you sort of have this unlimited number of images to choose from. But we've also made it possible to remix a collage wholesale. So that means you can open up any collage and just tap this remix button. And what happens is the app pulls all those pieces over and arrays them onto a new canvas. And now you're free to do whatever you like with them, including, because we have the original store on the server, including recutting the images. Even though the person who made the mixer before can use a different crop entirely, you can go back into any image and cut something new from it. And that means as you're remixing these things, you're exploring what the original person was using. Like, so this piece here is a piece of sky, and let's say you want to see what was behind it. When you open it up, you see that it's actually like a matte painting from The Empire Strikes Back, right? So you can cut out an entirely different piece and sort of give that piece an entirely different kind of meaning and drop it back onto the canvas and, you know, create something new from it. And you can see even with a new crop, you know, that piece is connected to all the other uses of that piece. You know, even though the crops aren't the same, you know, we know what the original is on the server, and we can keep them all linked. And so once you're done with this remix, what happens is it gets added to the end of what we call a remix thread. This is ours all the way on the right here. And this is a short thread. There's only three or four of them. But you can see that every time somebody remixes the thread, it gets added to the end. And some of these threads get to be dozens, if not hundreds, of remixes long. They're really robust visual conversations. So what we try to do in designing this experience is really try to closely align the consuming mode and the creating mode so that they're very, very close together. And we really believe that's how we've kept things simple. When you let the mode for creating something, you know, exist very, very far from the mode for consuming it, that's an opportunity for complexity to rush in and sort of fill in that gap. And that's a huge part of what we've tried to do is sort of keep these two as closely aligned as possible. And that's an important concept that I'll talk about again a little bit later. So now you've seen how the app works. So who uses Mixel? So, you know, I'm a designer. I've been a designer for a long time, and a lot of, you know, my, you know, constituency, so to speak, are designers. So we have a lot of folks like this guy, Sanongo Akpem, who is a young designer in New York City. He's just a really, really talented guy who started using Mixel and started making some amazing things. So this is actually not one Mixel. I just grabbed a whole series of his Mixels that put them together to sort of show you like this one subset of his body of work. He made a whole font out of remixes, basically, by tapping remix on somebody's collage, grabbing everything, and then creating letter forms out of it. And I'll show you up close. This is the letter B. It's just really, really exquisite stuff, right? It's just stuff that the original person who made the mix that he remixed it from probably just never imagined that it would be reconfigured in this way. But it's just really, you know, perfectly, you know, realized ideas that he's put together. He obviously has a very sophisticated visual sensibility. So we have a lot of folks like Sonongo on the app, but that's not really who we built it for. I mean, if we were building it only for people who were already comfortable with their creativity, you know, it would be, you know, besides the point. What we're trying to do is reach people, you know, like Monty Merritt, who is a lawyer living in Oakland with a couple of kids and a wife. I mean, the last person you would expect to go into a creativity and art app is somebody with a law degree, right? But he's really been just kicking ass inside the app for a long time. I mean, he's really made these wonderful, almost storybook-like collages. And there's just very simple things that don't require a ton of skill, but just, you know, just require time to play and free association. John S. DeFord is one of my favorite people on Mixel. He worked in human services for a long time. He was a director of finance, a director of behavioral health. He actually uses Mixel as a sort of release from multiple sclerosis. He's an MS survivor or patient, so to speak. And if you look at his work, it sort of has this sort of tapestry-like quality, almost like the way people do like needlepoint or quilting to sort of relieve tension. And you can see it's just really, really, really terrific stuff coming out of somebody who has otherwise you know, challenges mastering very precise tools. Marie Innes, she's an elder care worker in southern Australia. Actually, the interesting thing about Marie is she has considered herself artistic all her life, but mostly in the realm of the oral, in music. And Mixel, she says, is one of the first times she's starting to focus on the visual. And actually, it's really interesting if you look at her Mixels. They're very melodic or musical in nature, you know, just very, very, very harmonious in a way that a lot of other people's aren't. David Jacobs, he's an entrepreneur and a software engineer in New York City, and he just uses Mixel just to have fun. Like, he's actually the one who kicked off all the Justin Lin stuff on the network when Linsanity first erupted. And, you know, these are sometimes, like, you know, quite sophisticated compositions, and sometimes just like really simple stuff, really sort of corny, you know, puns, Happy Valentine's Day, etc. Just great stuff. Lindsay Donaghy, I'll run through these people more quickly, but she's sort of like our ideal user in that she was artistic as a child, and then when it came time to choosing a career path, she decided to become a software engineer and she lives in Arizona, but, you know, Mixel is her chance to start cutting loose and start creating really wonderful stuff. Bev Rogers, she has a home business. She actually, you know, is a baker. And if you look at her work, it's kind of celebratory in the way, like, baking is, right? They almost look like cake designs, in a sense. And Cindy Vanderven, she and her husband are retired. They're traveling the world, sort of, quote-unquote, embedding themselves in other people's cultures, learning, you know, their customs, learning their language, sort of trying to understand how they value things and how they see the world. And she says, this kind of travel actually includes a lot of solitude, and Mixel is a way for her to while away those hours. And actually, if you look at her work, it's very quiet and tranquil and peaceful. And actually, it makes me think I should actually quit my job and go and travel the world as well, because she seems so sort of like, you know, comfortable in the world in general. So it's just a sampling of, you know, the many, many different kinds of people who are doing stuff in the app. You know, really, people from all walks of life. You know, everybody can do this stuff, including, you know, the people in this room and the people that you know who you don't think are of as artists at all. So I want to go back to this idea of creativity for a moment. If you go onto Amazon and you just type in the word creativity, you'll sort of be, you know, overwhelmed with the number of books that come back, you know, hoping to teach you how to get in touch with your creative self, right? There's just countless books that are doing this. There's a whole industry built around this. But if you look at all of them, and I've looked at a lot of them, most of what they're trying to teach you is how to free associate, right? How to just let yourself go and just sort of make links that aren't obvious, and try to find threads or find, you know, juxtapositions that don't jump to mind you know, for the literal people. But actually, if you look at the social web, and at least in its early history, most of it has been very literal, right? Like Facebook status updates are really like what you're thinking or what you're doing at the moment. And Twitter is really a lot about text. I mean, entirely about text. And that's why it's been so effective about, I mean, with regard to journalism. It's really kind of a way to report the facts or your feelings and so forth. And I think this is starting to change. I think you're starting to see, you know, services like Tumblr, which are sort of bridging this. It's half text or maybe a quarter text and then, you know, three quarters, you know, visual. And I think Pinterest is another really interesting one where people are really starting to express themselves through visual presentation and not just words, right? And I think the interesting thing about Pinterest is if you step back from any Pinterest board, it's really like a collage that's just waiting to be collaged together, right? It's just like all these things that are thrown in there and sort of, you know, randomly, you know, juxtaposed with each other. I think what this starts to show us is that, you know, we really do engage the world through more than just the literal. It's not just text that we want to use to you know, project ourselves online. And there's this idea that there are multiple intelligences too, that, you know, we've got as many as 9 different ways of understanding the world around us. And, you know, traditionally education is focused on just the first two, on the visual, linguistic, and on the mathematical and logical. And, you know, by no accident, like, a lot of social media has been about these things to date. You know, but, you know, it's just important to understand the visual spatial part of it, you know, right? Understanding what your eyes see and then understanding, you know, how to see things in your mind and then how to make them, you know, into real things in the real world. You know, really understanding, you know, the links that aren't obvious, free association again. And we think, you know, the remix threads inside of Mixle are really like an ideal platform for this kind of free association. You know, and some of the threads are fairly straightforward and fairly simplistic and sort of follow the familiar, you know, patterns that you see in meme culture. So this is one of, you know, the bigger threads recently. We just call it the Happy Leo thread, where people just take this kind of crazy picture of Leo marching like an idiot and just putting him in all sorts of like really unexpected contexts, right? You know, like at war or with Hancock or, you know, in Planet of the Apes and so forth. People have a lot of fun with this stuff, and it's just all about like what unexpected thing can you juxtapose with Happy Leo? And that's terrific. We really like that as well. It's just because people are just having fun and engaging in this great visual conversation. But there are some threads that are, you know, a lot less obvious and still powerful, nevertheless. You know, there are some threads that sort of play on common themes. Like this is a thread that's just about counting, right? People just kept remixing and then gradually incrementing the numbers that their collages took as their subjects. So moving from 1 to 2 and then on to 3 and so forth. And then just, you know, thinking about like what each numeral is associated with, like 4 seasons and, you know, the number 6, et cetera, on and on. This is, I think, a terrific thread where people are playing with the idea of like dioramas, like from childhood when you know, create stuff for school. You know, it starts off with this picture of the inside of a box, and people just start, you know, working in this fashion where they're trying to recreate the idea of this little tiny miniaturized space. And you know, there's, aside from the box, there's very little that's carrying over from remix to remix. And it's really just about like what the next person, you know, free associates with what they saw previously. Some of them are really graphical. This is one that really almost can't be described because it's just about a bunch of arrows and about people just playing with the graphical shapes and seeing what results from them, right? And again, from remix to remix, there's very little that is, you know, carried over aside from that core, you know, graphical element that carries very little meaning in and of itself. And some of them are just silly, like this crazy cotton candy dog that people just start, you know, throwing around in interesting ways. So, you know, these are, we call them remixes, but in a way they're conversations, right? They're visual conversations that you couldn't really have in text form, right? It's not really about about, you know, like the way an exchange happens on Twitter or anything. It's really just about people just sort of talking to each other in a visual spatial way. And we think, you know, the threads spur creativity. They're really they kind of ignite your brain and satisfy you in a way that like retweets do, but you know, do it in an entirely different realm. At the same time, though, you know, what's more important is they're just really fun, right? So you go back to this idea of art, and how you know we're trying to get people to make art. Well, that's actually not what we're trying to do. Like, art is not the number one motive here. Like, what we're trying to do is get them to think about fun, right? Or to sort of get sucked in and forget about art, right? And just to really put an exclamation point on it. Like, once you get sucked into these threads, it's just enormously satisfying to sort of see your work, you know, come back at you in unexpected ways. And this is one of the main ways that we're really learning how to, you know, diffuse that creative inhibition. Because once you give over to this idea of fun, you forget about how good of an artist you are. You forget about, you know, how you weren't the one that had been tapped on the shoulder to continue, you know, making art and being praised for it as a kid. So, you know, we're learning how to do this stuff. We think we're just at the start, right? You know, we're still in the first major version of Mixel, and we have a long road ahead of us. And just some of the things that we've learned so far that you might find interesting. I'll pull out five things in particular. First, there's this idea that encouragement is key. Going back to the concept of losing that social context, you know, we're trying to restore that context and bring it back so that you have an opportunity to play again. And so we've tried to construct an environment where, you know, people really are spurring each other on. So just like with any other social network, you can like any Mixel. You can like any number of Mixels throughout the network. And there's no limitation on that. But we decided that we needed an additional layer of liking, like a super like or a love. So once you like something, the app asks you back, okay, you like it, but do you love it as well? And the way we make love special is you only get 5 hearts a week to distribute amongst anybody. So every Sunday night, the count refreshes. So even if you haven't spent them, it jumps back to 5. And so what's happening is as people are, you know, distributing these hearts or loving things, when the person on the other side receives that heart, they know that, you know, the piece that they made, the collage that they made, is really meaningful to the person on the other side. You know, somebody spent 20% of their love that week on them in the app. And it's actually really meaningful, and I think keeps people interested and engaged. Other big lesson that we've learned is it's still very early yet for tablets. It's still 1999 in a way for the iPad. If you look at this chart, this is unit sales of the iPad by quarter, starting in the first quarter that it shipped, which was in the quarter ending June 2010. So, you know, it's really, really healthy rate of growth, going from zero in 2010 all the way to, in the last quarter ending in December of 2011, going to something like, you know, 15 million units sold. So altogether, somewhere between 50 and 60 million iPads sold, which is really, really healthy. But if you compare that to iPhone, it's still, you know, just a fraction of what iPhone is selling. In the last quarter, iPhone sold something like, you know, 38 million units. And of course, the line for iPhone starts way back in 2007, right? So cumulatively, you know, the total number of iPhones shipped is, you know, far greater than the number of iPads shipped. So that it's getting better for sure. I mean, if you look at these two points, right? If you look at June 2010, when the iPhone had been around for about 2.5 years, maybe a little bit less than 3 years, they were shipping less than 10 million units. And if you look at the last quarter for iPad, you know, where they'd been around for a year and a half, it had already shipped more units than the iPhone had before. So that growth is there, but it's still not quite there yet for us. And so it's sort of limited the number of people who can look inside of our app, obviously. So not everybody can see all the great stuff being created there. And so We actually just launched the other day revised web presence so that people can get a better visibility about what's going on inside the app. So this is our previous web share page. When you shared something that you've done on Facebook or Twitter or Tumblr, you would get this page, which was, you know, basically all that we could get done before launch. It was a kind of a dead end where we shared the work itself. And then if it was part of a thread, there was a series of thumbnails at the bottom where you could jump to the other remixes in that thread. But you couldn't tap on the user's name in the top right and go and see all of their work. Well, as of Thursday, that changed. And we have these new web pages now where you can tap on the user's icon and go to their profile page and see all the work that they've done. So this person, Ivy, has done 112 mixels. And explore them all, and they will lead to other mixels and so forth. Additionally, you know, we're showing publicly all of the likes that you've made, all of the likes and the loves that you've distributed in the app. So it's a much more open-ended web browsing experience that we think is going to pull in a lot of people. So the reusability dynamic in our app is really powerful, but at the same time very scary for personal photos in particular. When you pull up an image from your iPad or from an image from Facebook, like this one, you're free to use it in the app, but you get this kind of scary warning that says that anybody on Mixel can reuse the whole thing even if you crop it. And so as a result, the reason we're doing this is because we don't want people to be under the mistaken impression that those images are only for them to use. They can be picked up and reused by anybody else, and so there is a small but significant possibility of abuse of those images elsewhere. And so we put up this very, very prominent warning, which, you know, has had the effect of dissuading almost all personal usage, almost all personal photo usage on the network. So one of the things that we're working on right now and that we'll be experimenting with in the coming weeks is this idea of private threads. The idea that you can create a Mixel and you can designate only your friends or only your family or only your coworkers. Only those people can see the Mixel that you've created. Only they can remix the Mixel. And any images that people within this thread add to the thread are secure inside the thread. They can't travel out from beyond the thread. And we think this will also open up a number of other use cases, like being able to brainstorm things at work, or to create a collage from your family vacation, or from your weekend out drinking with your friends, and so forth. More uninhibited use of your personal photos, I think, is going to bring people in. So lesson four: making something out of nothing is really hard. So we created Mixel because we just felt like there hadn't been anything out there like it before, and we just sort of wanted to see what people did with the tool. And right away, we saw a whole bunch of people make some really, really inspiring stuff. But in a lot of cases, you know, these folks were able to sort of get over the fact that there was nothing prompting them. They were able to just sort of get started. And in this case, this amazing Mixel by Andrew Ho, he almost literally made something out of nothing, or something out of something very little. If you look at the thumbnail at the bottom, it doesn't change as I tap on each of the pieces that make up this Mixel. What's happening is he used this one graphic of an abstract image and cropped it out over and over again in just the right way to construct this, portrait of a person. It's really a remarkable piece, and my jaw dropped when I saw that. And on the one hand, it's enormously gratifying to see people do something like this, really creating something out of nothing. But on the other hand, it's kind of a drawback, too, for people who come into the app and see work that is still, again, too advanced or too expert for what they think that they can do themselves. So one of the things we'll be experimenting with going forward is how to get people over that hump through editorial prompts, so we can say, come here if you're a beginner, or come here if you want to make Mixels about sports, or come here if you want to make Mixels about celebrities and so forth. Really giving people a problem to respond to when they first come in. And that is actually a segue into the last big thing that we've learned. Self-selection is really one of the biggest challenges that we face. This idea that I can't do this, and you know, I'm not good at this. I'm not supposed to be the one doing this. That's really been one of the things that's made it difficult for us to get other people to try it, because they automatically rule themselves out of it. You know, but of course, we believe that everybody can do this. We believe it's really inherent in everybody's nature, and you know, we're going to be, you know, iterating and working on how we can, you know, best sort of, you know, diffuse that inhibition. I mean, that's really our mission. Really, is to, you know, to do that, and it plays into our big vision where we think we can release a torrent of creative energy from millions of people from all walks of life, and get people, you know, really engaging this part of their brain that they haven't engaged since they were kids. And we also happen to think that it's inevitable, that, you know, even if we don't do it, we think that somebody's going to do it out there. You've got this perfect digital art-making tool in the hands of tens of millions of people now, and it's just something that is going to happen one way or the other. Somebody's going to combine tablets and social and art and make a mainstream success that is going to touch the lives of people who just didn't think of themselves as artists before, millions of those people. And we think it's going to be Mixel. Thanks so much for coming. I really appreciate it. So that ended a lot more quickly than I thought it would. And I would love to take any questions, if anybody has any questions. Yes, I think there's a microphone here if you want to step to the microphone.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, Mixel is awesome.
Thanks
so much. Yeah, it's great. I've been pretty addicted to this kind of new wave of sort of like easy creative tools for iPad and iPhone and stuff. And I'm a pretty creative person already, and I'm kind of wondering, like, have you thought about, like, what happens after we sort of teach everyone to, like, get back in touch with their creativity, and there's, like, a gap between, like, Mixel and Photoshop? Like, do you know, like, I'm just trying to figure out myself, like,
all right,
so everyone gets in touch with their creativity, they know how to make stuff, but they want to take it to the next level.
Yeah.
But it seems like there's such a huge gap between these tools and, like, Pro Tools.
I think that's a really great question. I think we're already starting to see a lot of that with Twitter. So Twitter is actually a very effective tool for journalism, but people are starting to build tools on top of it to make it more effective. Like, I think Storify is a great example of something that takes Twitter as one of its raw materials and lets you assemble more comprehensive kinds of reporting, and it's still very far away from like the reporting tools that a quote unquote true journalist will make or use. But I think what will happen is you'll get these tools maybe after Mixel or maybe other versions of Mixel that will gradually start to add more expert capabilities to them. For us, like every time we think about giving you more control in the app, we try to temper it with the idea that control is kind of a burden. Like, as soon as you know that you can achieve precision somewhere, you feel obligated to master that precision. And we really try to make the tools in Twitter incredibly simplistic so that you don't feel that obligation at all. And to create something between Mixel and Photoshop, I think, I don't really know exactly what it looks like yet, but it's going to hopefully stay true to that idea that people don't have to do this stuff expertly.
Thanks. And just while I'm up here, could you maybe talk about just your like team size and like how you went about like making the app?
I would be happy to talk about my team size. Actually, my team is all here, so I'm going to ask them all to stand up and be embarrassed one by one. So this is Scott Osler. He's my co-founder. He's like the genius that actually made it all possible and just did a tremendous job putting together not just the iPad app, but also the service. It's just an incredible feat that he pulled off in like 6 months. That's Scott. Next to him is Roy, who is our designer, and He just joined us, and he's the one who basically put together all the web profiles that I showed you earlier, as well as the revised Mixel detail pages. Just did an amazing job there. This is Joelle Alcandino. She is our community manager. She posts on our blog. She manages our Twitter page. She does our Pinterest stuff. She does this amazing array of stuff. And this Akiva Leffert, who is our iOS developer and who is just kick ass with iOS and has really been able to help us, you know, speed forward on that front as well. So it's basically five of us, and we have Vivek Patel. He's an intern who's in a few days a week, and we have an admin person who comes in a few days a week, Samantha Raditz, too. So that's basically the team. So can you please just give these guys a round of applause? Any other questions I can answer?
Hi there. Oh, can everyone hear me? I just wanted to say I thought your presentation was fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing all you've learned and your principles behind creating Mixel. I'm wondering if there are any plans to take Mixel sort of beyond online to the more physical world. I can just see so many applications to having Mixel be used by groups. I'm from Canada. I'm the Partnership and Networks Officer for Canada's arts agency, so the equivalent to the NEA. And I also produce arts events on the side where we sort of bring together art making and people who aren't necessarily artists themselves and exposing them to this. So I can just see so many different applications. And if you could speak to that, that would be great.
Most of our thoughts about further applications of the Mixel approach are around visual self-expression. I mean, we would love to see, to introduce like animation to the app, for instance, and start to engage time as another dynamic that you can work with as you're remixing things, and start to introduce maybe interactivity, being able to, because the art is all touchable. Like it's not a flat JPEG. You can open up any Mixel and touch any piece and sort of find out more about it. We want to introduce more kinds of interactivity. So beyond that, I'm not sure how to answer your question. I'm not sure I have an answer to your question, but I mean, I would welcome any thoughts about how to make that happen.
Yeah, just basically, if you know, you're thinking of bringing the online experience to offline.
Bringing the online experience to offline. It would be great. I don't know the answer to that. I think we've got enough work in front of us doing this online that to master the offline sphere, I'm not sure that I have a really clear idea about that right now. But maybe we can talk offline about it. Yes.
Some of the pieces were really awesome. Like, would there be an opportunity to potentially buy pieces? Like, some of this art is expressing and right, kind of promoting some type of emotion. So yeah, if you want to see that in some ways, kind of what she's asking, like see it with on a print on a wall, will that be an opportunity? But then if so, is there a problem with the original artist kind of providing that artwork?
Yeah, that is definitely something that we want to do, to let you, generate like a poster or a mug or any number of hard goods from the content that you see inside the app, and it does sort of go into the copyright, the IP issue. We really believe that these Mixels are fair use, and actually, if you look at almost all the Mixels that I showed you, they're not just simple repurposings of the original work the way that you might see like on a Tumblr or on a Postgres or something, where people are just replicating this stuff like wholesale without adding any value. I think the users on Mixel are creating new works, really, really, I think, substantial works out there. But once we get to that stage, I think we'll start with being able to, or letting you be able to generate hard goods from your own work, and then move into creating a marketplace where you can create stuff that other people might want to own as well. Yes.
Hi. How's it going? Love Mixle, also somewhat addicted. Actually, great. The first day I downloaded it, I let my one-year-old son play with it.
Yeah.
And it was actually pretty out. He had no idea what he was doing, but I brought one up that had Elmo in it. He's able to move things around, which kind of blew his mind and was touching things.
Yeah.
So I was just curious, is there any thoughts around kids and Mixle?
Yeah, we see a lot of parents using it with their kids. And we think that's great. I think we need to do a better job of making that like a safe environment for them. I think the private threads is going to be one of the things. People who use it with their kids often say that they just save the work to their... there's a little button that lets you save, take a snapshot and save a JPEG to your iPad's Photos app. And so we think if you can create this work with your kids in a protected environment, I think that will help that use case a lot.
Yeah, definitely. One other thing I was going to say about that, too, is that... you know, he's young. He's a year and a half now, but he loves this shiny reflective object that shows him Sesame Street sometimes.
Yeah.
What's cool about Mixle is that I actually feel like the more I give that to him and play with tools like that, he's actually still creating, but in his mind, he still thinks he's getting away with something watching the screens.
Yeah, I love that story. I mean, one of the things that we hear a lot is people use Mixle while they're sitting on the couch watching TV, and sometimes they're not paying attention to the TV. So the idea that And we also know that they're highly engaged. Like when our users come in, they spend a lot of time in the app. So just the idea that we're stealing time from TV, and instead of just directing your attention away from the big screen to a small screen where you're also consuming different kinds of content, but instead you're actually making something, I think that's a really powerful idea. So,
in the same trend, we published children's book. And one of the problems we have is a lot of people write, but then finding an illustrator who wants to spend a lot of time is a problem. I think you just solved it. It's beautiful. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Actually, Sinongo, one of the users I showed you, he's actually, I think, creating like a storybook or something using Mixle to create all of the works entirely. It's really a great project that he's working on. I think you can see it inside the app if you find him.
Hey, Coy. I wanted to say thanks to you and the team. Mixle is really great, and I've been enjoying it a lot. I was curious about the third-party social integration in the app. What kind of uptake you've seen on people sharing out things that they've made, and how many people it's brought into the app, and what kind of interaction you've seen there?
So within Mixle, you can push out to Facebook, to Twitter, to Tumblr, and a fair number of people do that, but I find, even when I've created something in Mixle, when it comes time to pushing it out to these networks, and I'm very motivated to do it, you know, because I have a stake in it. Even I find that I actually don't really know how to describe it. And I always there's always a very brief moment of hesitation before I do it. Because, again, it's like it's a non-literal medium. And pushing it out to a literal medium is not necessarily the most natural thing in the world. So, you know, I think a better fit for us is Pinterest. And, you know, Joelle has been pushing things out to Pinterest regularly, and the Mixles do really well over there because people are like, they say, oh, I like that, I want to add that to my board. But they don't have to create a literal expression of that action. It's just sort of about, okay, this is another little thing that sort of is going to represent me, you know, in the Pinterest sphere. So I think that works really well for us.
Hi. My question was about, I guess, just along the lines of what you were just talking about, expanding the use of these Mixles outside of its own application. So the only thing that I could think of, I've been seeing a lot of those Lytra light field cameras.
Yeah, right.
Pretty cool. But what's more cool about that is when you see one of those photos like embedded in a web page, you're able to sort of interact with it right there. And that part is completely transparent.
Yeah.
And it's that sort of meta-literate thing that you were talking about that you don't understand the value of it until you see it inside that other medium.
Yeah.
And it'd be really interesting to sort of play with a Mixle inside another medium like a web page.
And I think that's a very, very smart observation. We want to let you be able to do that on our sites, and we also want to let you be able to embed a Mixle on your blog or on your Facebook and still let you sort of touch the pieces and sort of see how they're put together and see, you know, the original source and where else it's been used. It's just all a matter of time. It's just like, you know, engineering hours required to do that. But, I mean, it's... On our roadmap.
Do you have plans to take it full on HTML in the future?
You know, I wouldn't rule anything out, but the main thing that makes Mixel work, I think, is the multi-touch interface. Just the fact that, you know, a one-year-old can figure out how to use it just because, you know, moving your finger creates a result. I think that is really essential. So I don't think it's a natural fit for a mousing environment. And I don't think that the engineering required to make it work with a mousing environment would be, you know, would justify the payoff that, you know, the payoff would justify the engineering required. So, okay, just time for a couple more questions. I like this. It's like we have few enough people that almost everybody's going to get to ask a question. That's like a very high rate of productivity.
So I really liked your last point there about self-selection and the whole idea of, like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
I think whenever you ask people to create something, that will naturally come where people feel they can't do it. So outside of a tutorial that really shows that it's really easy to get involved, engaged, and just do it, I was wondering if there's any other tactics that you're thinking about implementing to try to engage new users.
Yeah, so so I mentioned the editorial part of it, giving you like a subject matter area that you would normally gravitate to, so you could go and see content that's a little bit more geared towards, you know, what your interests are to start with, and that gets you over one barrier right away, and then you start to think, oh, I can engage in this right away and do something myself. I think that will help. I think you know, creating some areas or some content that gets people who are first-timers in the app working and creating stuff, I think really helps. Especially with private threads, being able to pull in your friends and pictures of your friends and your family. You know, that's, I think, one of the biggest missed opportunities for us right now is because, I mean, personal photos are like the currency of virality online in a way, or a major currency of you know, social traffic anyway. So the fact that people aren't using that in the app is, you know, a big opportunity that we'd like to grab. So if you got a Mixel from somebody else that, you know, had included pictures from, you know, last, you know, South by Southwest, you and your friends at South by Southwest, or whatever event, that already is much, much more meaningful than some of the, like, you know, really wonderful but still sort of abstract and kind of remote work that's being created in the app. So if we can get people to do that, that, I think, is a big part of getting over that self-selection problem.
So what are you seeing with the use of Mixel in schools? Anything related to curriculum integration or anything like that?
So we've seen some teachers who have been really interested in using it, and we're just starting to engage that audience, the audience of teachers. There are some limitations. Like, it's usually just the wealthier school districts who are able to provide a single iPad for every student or even have an iPad program at all. A lot of times kids will only get a little bit of time on the iPad if there's an iPad in their school. They might only get like a day a month on their iPad. So that's a problem. You know, creating an account, whether it's a Facebook or a Twitter or whatever, creating an account is a major problem in schools too, because when you create an account, you agree to all kinds of things that, you know, like a minor isn't necessarily qualified to agree to. And so if you have a teacher saying, create this account without the express understanding or approval of their parents, then it's difficult. So we're still working through that, and we think that, you know, schools is a really substantial opportunity for us. We just don't have the solution right now. And also just the reusable nature of it, too, and the social nature, too. I think a lot of schools sort of shy away from it because of the danger.
So I would also think about higher education.
Right.
As a place where they already have those accounts and they're already into, you know, the social integration is already there for them.
Yeah, yeah.
I think really powerful.
I think you're totally right, especially in the next 18 months or so. I think maybe this fall's like freshman class and then next fall's freshman class, I think, will be much more iPad capable than what we have right now. But, I mean, still, like I said, iPad penetration, the rate is healthy, but the penetration isn't really there yet. So thank you. Really, really thank you so much for coming here. Thank you. I really appreciate it.